and welcome to another episode of the Right Side Podcast. I am Andrea Ruth. I am here as always with my fellow co-host, Kimberly Ross. How are you?
I'm doing well, Andrea. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great. It is a beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest, and it's not even going to get up to 50 degrees, but it's sunny and cold. And
that sounds lovely for fall.
Yes, yes, I can do sunny and cold. The dark, oppressive, rainy, foggy days are the ones that you love, and I can't stand.
And I love them.
If we had fewer of them, I would probably feel the same way. Like, you probably, how many of those kind of days do you have in Mississippi?
We don't have very many at all. Like, it's mostly, it's a lot of sun. Like, if it's a foggy, cloudy day, that's pretty rare. And I know you have those a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much for the starting like next week until March will be pretty much that, probably 80% of the time. So with a smattering of sunny days here and there. Okay. Do you want to tell everybody where they can go to comment or talk about our podcast?
Yes. Well, you need to subscribe to our show. You can do that through iTunes and look up our show, of course, The Right Side with Andrea and Kim. And you can subscribe through there. You can also see the other shows we've done and the guests we've had. We've had terrific guests like Bridget Fetisi and Randy Barnett, and a lot of good discussion and people who are not exactly on the right side with us, but we drag them into our little zone and we talk to them. And we've had a lot of good conversations and we don't always agree. So go and check those out and listen and comment as well.
Yes. And remember that, did you say five is our favorite? Five stars is our favorite number?
Oh, yes. You also, when you do leave a rating, well, when you go to iTunes and subscribe, you need to leave a rating of 5 stars because we are worth 5 out of 5. We might be worth 6 out of 5, but we'll let you just do 5 out of 5 because yes. 5 is our favorite number. Right, Andrea?
Yes, exactly. So we had kind of start off with, we did have someone comment today on Twitter to Jonah Goldberg, from National Review. And he said that you and I sound very similar. And I find that to be not very true. What do you think? Do you think that we sound? Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think we sound very similar. I think we might, as far as kind of our tone, you know, just like the basic tone sounds similar because we don't, neither of us have high-pitched voices, like squealy voices. So maybe that, but I mean,
our accents are fairly ubiquitous. So
right. We don't have them. But I think people can pick out who we are pretty easily. I don't know. I mean, you have a fabulous voice, co-host.
So. So do you. But you know what? Maybe we both need to. I was always taught, my great grandmother was an English teacher, and she always taught my grandmother that, and her sisters and siblings, that having an accent was low class. And she was from East Texas. Now I've never told my grandmother or my aunt that they actually do have a little bit of an accent because I think they'd be highly offended. But I was just thinking maybe what we need to do is step up our, maybe I need to affect a more Canadian-esque accent, and maybe you need to accept the fact that you live in the South and pick up a Southern twang.
Now, of all the accents, though, I think if the more Southern one gets, it's just kind of connected to, you know, they might think it's connected to, I guess, not being very bright or not being educated, which is not true. Obviously,
right,
there's plenty of people in the South with accents like that. But it's funny because in America, there's so many different accents. Like Chicago, you think a certain way about someone. The East Coast, like New Jersey, New York, you think a certain way about someone. But it's I'm not sure I love any, no offense, America, I'm not sure I love any American accent. If there's an accent I had to choose from, it would be a British accent.
Yeah,
but
for
neither
English,
of us can do that. Yes.
Yeah. What's funny is I had a friend in, now you're from Illinois, and I had a friend who left in seventh grade, I think, and went and moved to rural Illinois, which I had no clue that so much of Illinois is not Chicago.
Two-thirds of the state is rural Illinois, which is where I lived, and then one-third of the state, which is its own state, is Chicago.
Yeah, that's a lot like Seattle and Western Washington as far as like the rest of Washington State. But the weird thing is that when I talked to her like a decade later, she had almost like like a very like Midwestern, almost Southern accent. And I don't know if that's a rural Illinois thing or what, but it was like, what is going on here?
Well, I lived in the, like almost the exact center of Illinois. It was called Central Illinois. And that's pretty plain. I mean, that's how my accent, that's where it came from. It's, I mean, people can't really tell, I guess, that I came from there because I don't really have a Northern or Southern accent. But honestly, obviously Chicago, there's a Chicago accent and I won't try to do it. But then the last third of Illinois, Southern Illinois, there's actually quite a bit of a Southern like dialect there. It's very strange because it's in Illinois.
But yeah, my friend moved to Galicia, Illinois. So that her her parents literally decided that they needed to get out of Western Washington because it was going to hell in a handbasket, and very very religious family, and they decided to move to Galicia, Illinois because of the word Galatia and Galatians, and it all had like a Bible connotation.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was very interesting. But we will move on to, like, I'm sure this is all interesting to us, but it's probably not interesting to anybody listening, but you should still leave 5 stars. Okay, maybe you can leave 4 stars because the Illinois accent talk was not riveting.
it lets them know a little bit more about us, and isn't that part of why we're here?
Yeah, and we're even going to play a little bit of get to know your podcaster at the very end if we follow our outline, which doesn't always happen. Oh, and in case you're wondering, dear listener, we haven't been ignoring a guest. We don't have one this week. So I just realized I didn't say that. But but we will be back on December 1st, taking the weekend off for next weekend for Thanksgiving break and 10th anniversaries. And yes. So we will be back on December 1st. The plan is to have political math on the show to talk about more of a topic that we are going to talk about today, which is civility in politics and just like in dealing with other people. And we kind of felt like this was a good topic going into Thanksgiving. Not that any of our listeners probably have any problems being civil to their family or other people, but maybe, just maybe. I know that I have a little bit of an issue with that every now and then and have to temper myself. But we'll be talking about that, this topic again, with Matthias because, it's an evergreen topic, Kim, isn't it? Like, didn't you see that?
Oh yes. Especially in the Trump era. It always comes up and people, you know, share their two cents, whether they think we should be civil or not, because the other person on the other side of the aisle is the devil. But yeah, it's always coming up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned before we went on air, I had, I made a non sequitur comment without saying that I was referring to Stacey Abrams, the, Democratic candidate who lost the Georgia race for governor, that I said on Twitter that she was a piece of work, and I had some Democrat who lives here locally tell me that I was coming at her substantiated claims with no way to back up, you know, with no substance of my own, and then told me that I was acting like Trump, and that all I could do was name calling, and then proceeded to tell me that I was acting like Trump, which is name calling. So I don't know. Is to anyone listening, you can tweet at us. Is calling someone a piece of work name calling? That's the question that I have today. So when we are, and Twitter is so easy to, and I have a penchant for this too, just going straight for the vein, right?
Yeah.
Like, straight for the jugular, just going like, okay, cutting you off at the knees, no conversation. And that's the thing. The thing about Twitter is it's so easy to scroll past. It's easy to drop a bomb and let it, and then scroll on, you know? And you kind of choose what you see on notifications. You can filter out pretty much every single notification except for somebody you follow. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, no. What was your question before I cut you?
Oh, I was going to say, when you come across that, like, is your, when you're making a conscious effort to be civil on Twitter, like, what is your go-to way to, like, do that? And do you find yourself getting caught up in, like, a very, like, negative tone?
I was thinking about that just this week. Like you said, it's so easy on social media, especially Twitter. I mean, not so much on Facebook. I don't really discuss politics very much on Facebook. I mean, I have my page private for like family and friends and all that, so I don't really do much like arguing about politics. But Twitter, especially since it's a very open platform, it's easy to, you know, argue with people and rather like viciously. But then of course, like you said, go for like an insult and below the belt, just because you don't want to deal with them, and it's almost like a never ending conversation. And I would say that how I deal with that is I'll have a conversation with someone, of course, and I work very hard. I actually make a conscious effort to not insult them, because I want to be someone who is seen as discussing the topic at hand and using facts and figures and share my opinion. And I can do all that without insulting them as a person, or, you know, where they're from, obviously what they look like, because that's when someone, you know, ridicules someone's appearance. Yeah, it makes me think that you're not capable of discussing anything at all. And it says a lot about the person, I think, which, yes, I think it says a lot about Trump, which you are not, by the way, by saying piece of work. But on Twitter, especially, I tend to might carry on a conversation back and forth with, someone, a few tweets. But if they keep going, I will probably just mute them or mute the conversation, or else it just kind of drags you down into the pit. But I was thinking about this week how different social media is compared to real life, because on Twitter, and this happens all the time, at least several times a week, and I don't know why, but if someone disagrees with me, they will plenty of times they will comment about my glasses. Now, I wear glasses, and I've had people say, well, have you ever heard of contacts? Well, no, person, I've never heard of contacts in my 36 years of living. Of course I've heard of contacts. I've tried contacts. They're not for me. They make my eyes hurt, and they really bother me. So I wear glasses. I wear glasses so I can see clearly. I apologize if that offends anybody. But people always comment on my glasses for whatever reason. Now, they're kind of different. They're like blue. They're very blue, electric blue. But people comment on them all the time. And actually, this week, in real life, off of social media, I had two different people say that they liked my glasses and liked the color. And I was like, that's so refreshing, because real life is this one thing, and these people commenting on my glasses in real life know nothing about my politics, and that's fine. These people online who know about my politics can only point out something that I wear, and that is their only source of, you know, an attack against me. So it was very like a juxtaposition of the real and the fake, and that's just really, I experience that a lot on Twitter, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the same with Facebook. It's funny that Facebook has become kind of this, like, I guess depending on how you use it. I know some people that still just like use Facebook like how I used it a decade ago, you know, like very involved. Yeah, I mean, Facebook has become like this little haven of like, it's just nice stuff here, people.
Right.
And I've even told friends and stuff like that, because I have to, not have to, but I do share. And I try sometimes not to share some of the stuff that I write on not like on my personal page and maybe just on my professional page. But I almost always do end up doing that. But at the same time, I've told like my friends, real life friends and stuff like that, which again, grew up and live in a very progressive area of the Pacific Northwest. And so I've just told them, I'm like, go ahead and just mute me, don't get offended and unfriend me, but just mute me. Like, I know that it's like not your cup of tea. But for the most part, again, my real life friends aren't that political at all. You know, they kind of lean Democrat, but they're not super into politics or watching the news and things like that. So that's also funny, that you can get along so well, and how little politics comes up when you are in a room, of family and friends. And what's also funny is that a lot of times I end up talking to my great uncle, who is a voracious all day long Fox News watcher, and it drives me batty. And he loves Jeanine Pirro, and he loves Lou Dobbs, and he loves all these people. And it just, it's, if he was on Twitter, I would like saying these things. Like, I know if he was some rando on Twitter, I would be like, oh my, like, I would not follow him, basically, but when I'm in a room with him having to talk to him, like, you kind of temper what you say. Like, I think I've alluded to the fact that, Jeanine Pirro's kind of a joke or whatever, and that Lou Dobbs is off his rocker on Twitter, and if my uncle ever saw him on Twitter, he'd probably, you know, be like, who is this guy? He's a lunatic. But, you know, but in real life, you learn how to temper yourself, and that we don't apply that to, and there's a lot of, you know, psychology, text on this phenomenon at this point, you know, 25 years after the internet became very widely in use. I think what's always interesting for people that are our age is that we were kind of the first age group that was really raised and went through all of our teen years with online capabilities of some kind, whether or not it was at home. Like, I think my dad first got, I think I was about 13 when my dad first got a computer, but it was just a computer. There was no online access unless we were at school. But still, even so, I mean, there was instant message, you know, chat rooms and stuff like that. But it was, I mean, still, we always have to remember that social media is, it's a brave new world type of issue. Yes. You know, we're only 10 years into Twitter, and Facebook is barely over a decade old. MySpace is now gone, but that was the, you know, the precursor to that.
And with all of the issues with civility online and everything, and it doesn't often kind of infect the everyday relationships and interactions you have with people. It really doesn't with me. I mean, I write, and people will read it or not, but people in my, you know, everyday life, we don't really talk about politics. But as far as like the holidays coming up with Thanksgiving and Christmas, and I think it was last year, and maybe it's several years in the past, but I think it was Slate and a few other places were talking about how to deal with your relatives who like Trump. Like, what do you do at the Thanksgiving dinner table? Should you sit with them? Should you talk with them? And that's, I mean, once you're all gathered as a family and maybe some friends and extended family and everything, and you're sitting around trying to have this holiday dinner, there's going to be different topics that come up. Politics might come up. And how, like you were saying with your relative, how do you deal with someone who has such political views that are so different from yours? And for me, I get frustrated at both the left and the right. I've voted for Republicans in the midterms, but Trump, I did not vote for him. So the super Trumpy aspect of politics gets on my nerves. Of course, the super like Ocasio-Cortez ideas and Sanders ideas, that obviously gets on my nerves. So how do you relate to people who are different than you and who you happen to be related to when, you know, politics comes up at the dinner table? And obviously we should be civil with people, especially our family, I believe. But how do you converse with them without having some huge fight at the dinner table? I think you should still talk about politics. I'm not one of those people who think, and as Andrea knows, I can be confrontational.
Yes.
That's a part of my personality, which sometimes I have to work on. But I don't mind confronting people about anything, which is to my detriment, you know, in different circumstances. But I don't mind talking to people about politics at the dinner table. I don't think we have to like shove it aside because it is so much of the, just like the American life right now and what we talk about in not just the news, but in movies and, you know, talk shows and everything. So I'm fine personally bringing it up at, you know, a dinner table and talking to people about it. And like for Thanksgiving, my parents are coming down to our house and having Thanksgiving dinner with us. They're more on the Trump side of things, so we might talk about, you know, Trump, but it's, you know, not going to come to blows or anything. But then at Christmas, we see so many more people in extended family, and there are some on the far left and then some even further to the right. And do I bring it up then, or do I just let, like, conversations come up organically and just deal with it then? So, Andrew, what do you think about bringing up politics? Do you want to bring up politics at the holidays? Do you think they should be brought up? And how do people like deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, the family that I see is mostly, you know, there's not really any Democrats. I think the thing that I, which is funny because, you know, the area that I live in, but the thing in my family that actually causes more arguments is between my dad and I, which I've mentioned before, the Alex Jones issue. So, I mean, that does cause so it ends up being, I mean, I've gotten into arguments at, I mean, the last major argument I got in around politics was 2 years ago around the 2016 election, and with my brother-in-law who had voted for Hillary. And you know, it's just, I think I've pretty much like written off any, like really talking about any politics. I'll kind of like, I'll drop truth bombs, I guess. Like I'll say one little thing. If I hear somebody talking about, you know, how much, you know, more violent, you know, things are these days and stuff like that, I'll just kind of like chime in and go, I'll do that. Well, actually, you know, kind of thing.
Actually.
And, yeah. And I'll cite, you know, a couple like, you know, the crime statistics that actually things are more, you know, that they're better than they were in the 80s and 90s. And then I kind of leave it at that.
And then you leave the room. Oh, I love that.
Well, and you know, it is worth saying, you know, that it's better to be silent and thought a fool than open your mouth and remove any doubt. And the one thing that, again, because of, you know, just growing up, I guess. And also, I always think of Jane Austen and like Mr. Darcy for this one, is that when you're quiet, you're either thought as, you know, smart or stupid, depending on what other people think about you, which is really none of your business. What other people think about you is none of your business. Mm-hmm. But unless they're going around maligning you, and then it becomes part of your business. But whatever people think about you is none of your business. They're going to think that. But and you can't worry yourself over it. But at the same time, being silent a lot of times and just like not becoming embroiled in the conversation means that you're not. Like I said, you're not coming off as stupid or smart, but you're definitely coming off as, you know, not willing to engage in an argument. And again, like I said, just kind of like dropping little bits and not getting totally wrapped up in the conversation, I guess, is how I deal with that stuff. Mm-hmm. With my dad, I've just kind of learned how to let it go. And if he brings up anything to do with its crazy talk, I just kind of, we're getting so many dementia people in my family at this point that you kind of just let them talk and you learned how to just kind of roll your eyes and move on. But when it comes to people that I would actually want to engage with, it really doesn't come up that often. And I really have to wonder, have we completely lost the ability or remembered how to gossip about the family member that's not there? I mean, it's better. I mean, at least we can talk like with more knowledge about that. You know what I mean? And I'm not, and that is a joke because I'm notoriously anti-gossip in my family. So that is completely a joke. But you would think that we would find, you know, more things that we could agree and sit around. There's tons more things that you agree with most people than you disagree with, and find those things. You know your family. You know what you guys agree on and what you don't agree on. You know, like, there's plenty of other topics. I don't know if you know, it's like I sit there and I'll talk about, you know, documentaries that I've watched, you know, things like that. I mean, there's plenty of other things besides politics. And yeah, I would, I mean, Kim, I guess I would just kind of err on because of the volatility, especially when it comes to politics with my dad, and the fact that he literally has listened to real fake news for almost two decades now. I'm on the opposite end of you, where I say avoid it at all costs, just because you can't argue with someone who's making stuff up.
Right. And it's different for every family, and there's like this, some, whatever it was, a Slate or the Salon article saying what you should and shouldn't do. It's different for every family. Like, there's are different family dynamics, and there's different, you know, pasts involved and what they have and have not been, you know, interested in the recent years and everything. So there's obviously different family dynamic. But one thing I know that you appreciated this, and I did too, recently, and I'm sure most people, well, a good portion of people saw it or heard about it, was on SNL a few weeks ago. Mm. You know, Pete Davidson, one of the stars of SNL, he ridiculed Dan Crenshaw, a Texas congressman, a congressional candidate, for his eye patch that he wore. And of course, we all know that he wore the eye patch because he was injured in his third tour in Afghanistan, and there was an IED blast, and he actually lost his eye. So Pete Davidson ridiculed this guy on SNL. Of course, he came under, you know, a lot of criticism for that, and so did SNL. And people on the left and the right had a problem with it, as they should, because this guy was a war hero. Well, then the next week, it was last Saturday, 1 week after the original incident, Dan, this congressional candidate who had actually won on midterm election day, he appeared on SNL next to Pete Davidson, the guy that had ridiculed him, and they had this moment of apology. I mean, Pete apologized to him. Dan took a few little, like, you know, harmless shots at Pete with some funny little commentary. But then Dan said that we as a country, you know, need to come together. We need to obviously respect those who have fought and died in the war, and we need to obviously respect the first responders. And Pete Davidson's father had been one of the firefighters who had died in 9/11, and it was just this beautiful moment of civility. And I so appreciate that, because we hardly ever see it. And then I think it was today on the CNN State of the Union with Jake Tapper, Dan was talking with two other representatives who had won for, you know, on midterm election day. And he said, quote, "Don't insult people. We can attack each other's ideas, but not each other's people. That should be the goal moving forward." And he was promoting bipartisanship and civility in the new Congress. And I think that as much as it's the DC is pretty different from our dinner table, we can promote a sort of idea of bipartisanship and civility and not attack other people. And maybe, as frustrating as it is sometimes, if we're going to talk about politics, we can agree to disagree and just move on, because life isn't all about politics. I mean, that's a small sliver of it for some people, but it's not. There's so much more to life than that. And so I think the idea that we can attack each other's ideas if we want to, even, and rip them apart, but not individuals. And I think the moment between Crenshaw and Davidson was a really great moment for America, because we seem a little embroiled in constant, you know, conflict right now. So I loved that.
Yeah, one of the things that I think we've kind of gotten away from, you know, the rules, the standard rules that, you know, our parents or grandparents kind of grew up with the things that you're not supposed to talk about in public are religion and politics, and the things you never ask about is who someone voted for and how much they make. That's what my mom used to always tell me. You know, those are two specific things to never ask someone, and two topics to kind of avoid with people in, you know, in public or in, you know, any kind of like non one-on-one or small group situation. But again, with family, it's family. Sometimes it seems like you should be able to, like, you know, talk about whatever you want to with family, but, you know, just it is as we've talked about in the past, like with Bridget Fantasy, who you brought up earlier, that we used to be at least perceivably a less kind of stratified populace, where we all were kind of like, oh yeah, we're all somewhere in the middle, you know. But now it's like you've got these two, you know, far left or far right. It's like there is no kind of, you know, it's like, okay, but we're all probably, if you went around and asked us, somewhere in the middle, you know, on things, and we've lost that. One of the things that you wanted to talk about and that I thought was really interesting when it comes to civility and just how we talk about things, and this isn't even political, although he tied it back to politics, was Bill Maher taking the death of someone beloved to a large swath of Americans, and even probably worldwide, you know, citizens of the world, you know, of Stan Lee passing away, who reinvigorated comic books after World War II. And do you want to kind of explain what, like, how low he went to, like, get to where he got to on this whole thing, and just how bizarre it was and very uncivil when you're talking about civility, especially regarding someone's death.
Definitely. Well, we all know Stan Lee died, and he was this icon of Marvel Comics and has been, you know, the staple in kind of American imagination for the past several decades. And he died, I think he was 95, but he died this past week. And Bill Maher, who I mean, sometimes he makes good points. It's very rarely that I really agree with him on anything, but sometimes he makes good points. But he completely ridiculed the passing of Stan Lee. And then more than that, he ridiculed the people who were mourning the passing of Stan Lee because I don't know, I don't know if he feels, I don't know, offended that people don't love him as much or something. But he wrote a blog post on Saturday, and he essentially trashed Stan Lee and the people who love Stan Lee. He said, quote, "The guy who created Spider-Man and the Hulk has died, and America is in mourning. Deep, deep mourning for a man who inspired millions to, I don't know, watch a movie, I guess." And then he basically went on from there and criticized people who are now adults who haven't given up this, quote, kid stuff. He said, quote, "They pretended comic books were actually sophisticated literature." And before I get to his, like, political tie-in, I'm not the hugest fan of superhero movies. I don't collect comics. I don't read comics. I like some of the, like, Captain America and Avengers stuff. I enjoy Batman. I mean, all these different things, even though Batman is DC Comics, I think. I mean, I enjoy that kind of stuff. I liked the last Avengers movie. It was enjoyable. It's fun. It's entertainment. So I'm not as invested in it as some people, but I don't think there's a problem with reading comic books. So they're actually, I mean, people don't view them as sophisticated literature from the 18th century. They're enjoyable. They're imagination. It's entertainment. Especially the comic books themselves, they take a lot of work to, you know, prepare the stories and the pictures and everything. So it's not an easy thing to do. And there's quite a few people, men and women, who enjoy collecting this and sort of delving into the storylines, because a lot of these storylines can go on for decades, and there's different chapters for these people. So I thought it was rude that he was ridiculing people for mourning an icon that they've looked up to for years, just on the basis the fact that they love comic books is somehow a bad thing, which I don't think it is. But then Maurer said, and this doesn't tie in. I mean, I'll get your opinion on this, but I don't think this goes together at all. And then he said, quote, "I don't think it's a huge stretch to suggest that Donald Trump could only get elected in a country that thinks comic books are important," end quote. Well, okay. Donald Trump has been the president for 2 years, and comic books have been around for decades and decades and decades. So that's not a, you know, symptom of Donald Trump being, I mean, Donald Trump isn't a symptom of this love of comic books, because those have been around for a long time. They will continue to be around long after Donald Trump, you know, finishes his first or second term, however long he's in office. So trying to tie that together and essentially saying people who love comic books are morons and so they elected Donald Trump is, first of all, stupid and not factually correct, because there's plenty of people on the left who love comic books who don't at all support Donald Trump. So I thought that was pretty horrible of him to say. But it made me think of a quote by C.S. Lewis. And I love this quote. He said, "Since it is so likely that children will meet cruel enemies, let them at least have heard of brave knights and heroic courage." And as we know, C.S. Lewis wrote Chronicles of Narnia. It's very much an allegory of faith and Christianity. And a lot of it was geared towards children, of course, but I love C.S. Lewis and I love Chronicles of Narnia. I love all the books, and I've read them as an adult too. And there's nothing wrong with that imagination and that whole, you know, enjoying going into the fantasy world. And actually my husband was saying that Lord of the Rings, when it first came out by Tolkien, and people love Lord of the Rings, it was ridiculed for kind of the same reason. People were saying, this is really dumb. It's not sophisticated as all these other things. So of course, I think Bill Maurer is wrong for criticizing people who love Stan and comic books for mourning the passing of an icon. And then trying to connect it to politics, it just doesn't compute. So I thought that was really tacky of him. And that's not the only celebrity I've heard of who's kind of taken a shot at Stan Lee's fans. And I don't know what it is about them feeling, I don't know, like they can't live up to the same sort of celebrity that they wish, you know, that they had compared to what Stan had. I don't know. It was just very odd.
Yeah. Was Stan Lee a Trump supporter?
I don't know what he was either way. Like, I don't remember hearing about his political leanings at all. So
yeah,
I mean, it was weird.
Yeah, I think it is kind of like it's kind of a condescending way to like refer to an entire, and I always thought that, you know, like gamers and people into comic books, the people that I have to like refer to, you know, that are like my main references for comics fans is Kevin Smith of, you know, Jay and Silent Bob. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not right wing. So I think that that is a very like specious argument to make a correlation or try to make a correlation between like our country enjoying, you know, things like Superman or, you know, I mean, the Green Lantern is like a major like global warming guy, right? Like right. That whole thing was made up around the, you know, I believe in like he's the Green Lantern, he's combating climate change and stuff like that. Anyway, so yeah, I totally agree.
There's a lot of like one. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say there's a lot of one world like references with, you know, comic books and like that's not so much conservative, you know? So the idea that all these comic book fans, especially Stan Lee fans, are somehow Trump supporters, that's very weird.
And yeah, and vigilantes. I mean, yes. what do you think Batman is? He's a vigilante. There is no outside world outside of what Gotham, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Superman is in Metropolis or whatever? Like it's a generic.
It's strange. And one thing I didn't know until this week after he had died was that obviously Stan Lee, I knew he was in World War II. He was, I believe, in the army. But after he had like a stint as a soldier, he actually worked on war posters and created them as, you know, a way to encourage Americans and sort of get people involved in the war effort and everything. And so I'm not so sure how that, like, you know, led to him being in, you know, the comic book world, but obviously he was talented and he used it for good during a very, you know, crucial time in American history. So, I thought that was really interesting. And again, Bill Maher's a moron for saying what he did. And I'm not even a huge comic book fan.
I know. Well, I was just about to say, I don't actually know anybody who's into like comic books, you know. It's like Marvel Comics, DC Comics. Like the only comics I've ever read in my life are like I've read all the Garfield books and all the Calvin and Hobbes books. Those aren't the same, mm-hmm. though. Those are like strip comics, you know. It's like right. They're not graphic novels, which my daughter, oddly enough, like enjoys graphic novels and things like that. But it's a whole different world. And going after people for, you know, it's again, like we were talking about, you know, the ad hominem attacks. Like I would put making fun of people for being comic book fans into that same realm of bizarre attacks, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what else were we gonna talk about?
I think you're gonna bring up embarrassing pictures from childhood, weren't you?
Are we there already? Oh my goodness, we are. We're 37 minutes in. Where'd the time go? I'm sorry, people. We've just been talking and talking about it. Yes, so I have been this weekend, in the past like month or two, my daughter has gotten really into like family history, which I have always been very, I've told you before, like I'm kind of on the same level with your husband on like doing ancestry is my hobby and has been since I was about 15 years old.
So you have a huge family tree that you've been working on for a long time.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then I also did my fiance's over the past year. I berated him into letting me do it. And his only stipulation was that I couldn't involve him in it. But that didn't turn out so well. But the little bit that he let me drag him into it, he told me that he enjoyed it. So I was glad. But I've been promising my daughter that we would go through. My mom has this big, huge plastic tote of photos and it was heavy. And man, getting it out, it was just me and her. And of course, I'm in a wheelchair and only have one arm and one leg. And so we were trying to, and this thing probably weighed about, I don't know, 45, 50 pounds. We were trying to figure out how we're going to get it into the house, up my ramp into the house and stuff like that. We were like, oh, we'll take my wheelchair and Abby can just like put it on my wheelchair. She's 10, right? She's not that big. And so she had this big, huge tote on my wheelchair and we're taking it out. She forgot that there's a lip on the entrance, the beginning of my wheelchair ramp and slammed right into it. And the whole tote just went flying off. Oh. So, you know, we had, Okay, Abby. Okay, I'm not supposed to tell. Sorry. Stop it. Sorry. Not to take that stop it out of there. But no, no. So we were going through these photos and I've been sharing a few of them on social media, but the one thing I could not believe, and I have to add a caveat. So one of them was me in 1989 when I must have been 7 years old. My class picture, my hair is completely straight. It's short. The following year, it was just out to China with curls. And I mean, obviously like it was curly and I tried straightening with a brush and I was like, but I realized, and so I was like, man, my hair curled up that early. And I realized I got my hair permed when I was around that age. So I think that was a perm, mm-hmm. but I don't think my hair ever, and I think it might have gone back to being straight like it was after that. But then I got it permed again, like around that same time, and it never went back straight ever. So I always chalked it up to, oh my goodness, I got a perm and it totally changed my hair. But I don't think that was it at all. It was just like, it was right as I was like hitting puberty around like 10, 11-ish. Because yeah, I went through puberty early. So it was like 10 or 11. So it was right then that my hair like was going curly anyway. I just kind of like sped along the process, but it was shocking. But yeah, and like funny things, like I had written this, I wrote this little journal, like this project for school, and I called it The Complete Idiot's Guide to Emerson and Thoreau. I have no recollection of ever
that
doing
is
that.
Hilarious.
but I got 10 out of 10 on it.
I can picture that you wrote yeah. that. I can so picture that.
Now, what's funny, and I wanted to ask you about this, and you don't have to like give your side of this, but I showed my daughter, because my daughter always asks, well, you know, I told her, like, you know, the story about like why she's named Abigail, that she was named after Abigail Adams, the second first lady. And I kind of got some proof for my daughter that in third or fourth grade, I wrote a biography for school about Abigail Smith Adams. And my mom kept it. I still have it. It was kind of crazy, but,
cool.
Yeah. So anyways, I was just like, I was just going to see, and you don't have to do this, see if where you came up with your son's name.
Oh, it was actually just, I mean, I never thought about it until, I had actually a different name picked out until we were several months along into the pregnancy, and then I just liked the sound of it and the meaning behind it and everything. Yeah, it was nothing cool about like 25 years ago, I wrote a school story. Nothing
cool. Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, no, that's...
But I'm jealous of your curly hair that kind of came and stayed, because I've had bored straight hair my entire life. And around like third grade or fourth grade, I was really like focused on getting curls in my hair. Uh-huh. And this is going to sound so elderly, but I actually used some of my mom's like metal rollers, and I would sleep in metal rollers. And sometimes I have no idea why, I would just put them in my bangs. Oh. And have like stick straight hair that was like down to my elbows on the side, and then have crazy curly bangs. And I thought I was so cool. And it's hilarious to go back and look at those pictures. I was like, oh, yep, that's a school picture that I thought I would just curl my bangs for. I don't know. Yeah, I was thinking in 1989 and 90.
that's exactly what going through some of these photos was like. I was like, oh my goodness. I saw a photo of myself. Okay, so when I was 19, went to South Africa with my boyfriend at the time. We dated for 5.5 years, but we stopped. We had a 15-hour layover in London, and we actually were able to leave Heathrow and go out and explore. I mean, we did everything. I mean, we watched the changing of the guard. We went to Piccadilly Circus. We did all these things. I saw a photo of what I wore that day, and it was Kim jean overalls, a red tank top, flip-flops, and I, like, because I don't know what I was doing with my hair. My hair was, I think it was like a little bit, I don't even remember how my hair was styled back then, if it had a style at all, but I think it was probably like maybe like chin length or something like that, because yeah, my senior year I had cut it really, really, really short, like maybe like an inch short, and so it had grown out a little bit in that year and a half. But I had Kim, I had a bandana tied around my head, my hair.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
I looked like a hobo.
You had the chance to make this fashion statement in London, and that's what you chose?
It was awful. It was awful. It's embarrassing to look
but
at.
Coming back. Like, they're back. Overalls are.
Yeah, but they weren't in that. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah. And I was probably about 100 pounds heavier than I am now. So... Or close to that. So it was not flattering, and especially after, and it's also like we'd been awake for at least 24 hours at that point. So it's been one of those things. So I just wanted to like share with you, like, that's what I've spent my weekend doing. And it was just appalling. And I actually had someone tell me when I shared those photos of my curly hair, my straight hair, and then my curly hair, someone actually had the gall to say, The fact that you would turn out to be a pretty woman was not evident when you were in first grade.
Oh man, that's mean.
Yeah.
So not true.
Guys, when women are sharing photos where they know they look bad that were from 30 years ago, you can refrain from the derogatory comments, because trust us, we know.
Just and we're shut sharing, your mouth, men.
And we're sharing them.
Yes.
Because look at how far we've come.
We've come so far. And it makes me glad, personally, because I had some rough growing up years in terms of fashion and hairstyles, that there was not social media around then. Because
yes.
I did not need pictures of myself with braces and colored rubber bands, smiling really big, flashed across Instagram and Facebook. Did not
Do that. No. Yeah, no. And I think that's one of those things where I'm also trying to be a little bit more like careful, to where I only share like photos where my daughter looks really, you know, like pretty, you know, because I'm like, yeah. I'm like, okay, like, you know, in 15 years, she's not going to appreciate the dorky one where she's, you know, doing something silly. So, but all right, well, people are probably bored out of their minds, but oh well, we had
a great chat, and they got to know us a little bit more.
Yeah, that's the one thing about doing these one-on-ones, is that we kind of get to talk more about just things that we're kind of doing, or things that pique our interest and things like that. So leave us a comment and a review. Tell us on Twitter or Facebook what you like best or hated about this show, so that we can kind of, you know, either double up on it, the stuff you hate, or not do it as much, the stuff you like. Because we're contrarians like that, aren't we, Kim?
We are.
All right. Well, Kim, where can everybody reach you?
On Twitter, you can reach me at Southern Keeks, KEEKS. On Facebook, at Kimberly Ross Writer. And I'm at Washington Examiner and Red State.
All right, so for the Thanksgiving break, what are you going to be reading or watching so that people can check it out if they haven't yet? Anything?
Oh, well, I mean, we're having family in town, so it's probably not a lot of time to sit down and read, but we will probably watch It's a Wonderful Life, which we tend to watch a lot during the holidays, you know, so one of those things.
Yeah. So you can follow me at Andrea and Ruth and find me at redstate.com. Sometimes, but you see here, I'm going to be reading, Russ Roberts, who is, he does Econ Talk podcast. He's also a professor of economics at, I believe, UC Berkeley or maybe Stanford University. I'd have to go check. Sorry. Sorry to Russ Roberts. But he wrote a book called How Adam Smith Can Change Your Life. And so I read it like 6 years ago when it first came out. And so I saw it on my bookshelf last night. And so I'm going to be perusing that again, because I have made a conscious effort to be happier in my life. So I'm doing all those kinds of little fun little things, and it's actually working. So, check that book out, and check out Econ Talk after you listen to this podcast, of course. All right. Bye. See you next month.